Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage. That's timeforawakening.com, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening, and listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can go to TuneIn or download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices, your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, after it's downloaded, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can listen to the program live streaming, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media, the homepage is there. It should be one of your favorites. If not, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. That'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you see more interesting content, articles, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. On the heels of the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, we'll get an update from one of our brothers down there, Houston-based activist and organizer, Brother Derek Muhammad, will be with us this evening to talk about what's going on down there in Houston among our community and other hot topics that relate to our struggle here in the United States. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to this 8th update on what's going on in our family down in Houston, Texas. And it's, you know, just a heartfelt thing as things continue to develop.
Well, you know, I'm glad that this program has reached a lot of people around the country. Brother Derek Muhammad has been with us several times before to talk about the Black Male Summit down in Houston. But and we'll talk about that also tonight in conversation. But we really want to get a little background on what's going on with our people down there, brothers and sisters down there in the Houston area, which Derek has been a lifelong member. We're getting a little feedback, Richard. You all right?
Yeah. I had mentioned what was going on. You still hear the feedback? I'm not.
No, we're all right. We're all right for the time being. We'll bring in Brother Derek. Brother Derek, how are you, sir?
I'm blessed, my brother. I'm blessed.
I'm glad to have you back with us, man. Yourself, me and Brother Richard is here keeping the fires going.
Assalamu alaikum, my brothers. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's good to be back.
Brother Derek, you know, as I told the listening audience, we usually have you on to kind of give us an update on the Young Black Male Summit. Smarten Up summits that you have going on down there all the time, dealing with our youth. But this occasion is a little bit different. It's been a catastrophe that hit our brothers and sisters that live in the Houston area.
Yes, sir.
And you've been a lifelong resident of Houston. Talk about some of the things that have been going on since the rain stopped, and then we'll kind of do a little backstory on leading up to the rains and what has been going on since. But just give us a little overview on what's going on now before we jump back.
Yes. Right now we're still dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, particularly the floodwaters caused by the torrential rains that fell for several days. I can honestly say that I never thought in my life that I would ever see that much rain falling from the sky. And if you were in Houston at that particular time while the rain was falling, it had to at least cross your mind once, at least one time, whether or not you'd live to see another day. It was a very, very sobering experience. But right now, we're kind of, we're still in what they call rescue relief mode. Now, the rescue part is minimal because there are persons who are still having to be evacuated from their homes because they released water from two of the major reservoirs that were designed to hold the rainwater. And as they released those waters, little by little, people's homes that were not flooded by the actual rains are being flooded by the reservoir releases. So people are still being rescued in that sense. But for the most part, we're making our way toward the relief and recovery side. So several relief centers and donation centers have been set up. I mean, I've seen relief centers set up in churches, set up in mosques. I've even seen a couple of strip clubs open up donation and distribution centers. That being said, you know, an unprecedented weather event has caused an unprecedented humanitarian effort, neither like I have never seen before. I've never seen anything like the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, and I've never seen anything like the relief effort that I'm seeing right now. So it has definitely been the curse and the gift.
Brother Derek, the relief effort that's going on, you know, according to published reports, it mentioned in the Texas Tribune, I think, I saw it in, that historic black neighborhoods had been devastated by floods. Talk about some of the neighborhoods down there, particularly where we live. I'm not, you know, people are people. But I really want to focus in on our folks. Talk about some of the neighborhoods that have really been hurt and, you know, where you are. Is it bad? Give us a little overview.
You know, historic neighborhoods like Fifth Ward, they got minimal damage in most of the areas, but a small part of Fifth Ward was hit very hard. A smaller part of Missouri City was hit very hard. But to be honest with you, Third Ward, which is a historic black community, minimal damage. Fourth Ward, which is a historic black community, minimal damage. Acres Homes, historic black community, not a lot of damage. White folks' communities got hit harder by this storm than ours. As a matter of fact, the majority of the black folk that were impacted and affected in a major way were those who live among white people, or, you know, white neighborhoods. That's what I would just, you know, call them just for the sake of this interview.
Okay.
Out in the suburbs. So this was a very, very interesting storm in the way that the devastation was sprinkled around, or meted out, or passed around, if you will. But most of our historic black communities actually did not take the brunt of the devastation. But you literally would have to be from Houston or really be familiar with the way Houston is set up in order to understand. Because I'm saying that, but in the same breath, when you look at the shelters, they are mostly black folk in the shelters. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So Houston is so spread out and it's so demographically diverse. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's integrated, because it's not. But it's so big and so spread out, it's probably unlike any other city. So it's kind of difficult to explain the way the devastation really, really hit each neighborhood. But historic black communities, for the most part, really didn't get as much damage as is being reported.
If I may, Brother Derek and Brother Elliot, just as you said that, the question that came to my mind, could that be because of the income level of black people in general compared to whites? You made reference to suburbs, that in the sense of being just prepared, even a little bit hurts a lot if you don't have a lot. And I'm wondering if you could be able, is there a way you can be able to say that may have had an effect on why so many people are in shelters, Africans are in shelters?
Well, really, you know, the preparation for a hurricane is really not that expensive. And this was not a storm that you could really prepare for. You understand what I'm saying? If a storm, the storm waters cover your first floor and your second floor all the way up to the roof, it's just very difficult to prepare for that. But yes, I agree with you. The reason so many of us are still in shelters is because, you know, other folks from other communities, they have somewhere to go. They have resources that we don't, as far as the recovery effort was concerned. But some of these rescue boats, brother, they had the wealthy sitting on one side of the boat, and on the other side of the boat sitting someone who might make $20,000 a year. It was just 3, 4, 5 days where it appears as if though everybody was in the same boat. But yeah, most definitely, resources and the lack thereof make all the difference in the world as to your ability to recover from something like this.
Brother Derek, the a published report talked about a chemical plant exploding or chemicals being released from a plant because they didn't have the electricity to keep the cooling units going. Talk about that.
Yes, in one of the suburb towns of the city of Houston called Crosby, there's a chemical plant out there. And maybe a day or two after the rains actually subsided, the reports started coming out that they were leaking, chemicals out into the air. So there are a lot of black folk that live in that small town, Crosby, believe it or not. And I just got through talking to a brother who was telling me that his grandparents had to evacuate. So there is some debate as to whether or not the air quality is good enough for those people to stay where they are. But I think they've been, I think they have been advised to evacuate. I know I would, but yeah, a lot of those folks, they evacuated from Crosby and they've come into Houston as well, sought shelter in some of the shelters. Others are staying with relatives, but it's just one of many evacuations that had to be made out of the city. Like the mayor, just this morning when I woke up, I saw where the mayor was issuing evacuation orders for a neighborhood out in West Houston because the water was still rising, a white neighborhood. And it's an ongoing process. You know, when you go to sleep at night, you don't, when you wake up in the morning, you never know what it is that you're going to see. So it was literally impossible to prepare for a hurricane and for flood waters of this magnitude. It's something like we've never seen before. So how can you prepare for something that you've never seen before?
Brother Derek, the published reports talk about the you got to excuse me, too, because I think it's some type of celebration going on where Richard is, so you might hear a little interference going on. Okay. The published report talked about the millions of dollars so far that have been donated by companies to help towards the relief effort. I think Walmart donated several million, Verizon, 10 million. I think 69 other companies donated over $1 million. We know that a lot of times when these companies donate money, the same thing with Katrina, it never gets to our neighborhoods. It never helps out our people. Being that you said a lot of the devastation didn't hit a lot of the historically black districts, we know that the supermarkets and other things will be affected because they won't get deliveries. And probably the water system will be affected because, you know, everybody, dealing with drinking water.
Right.
Talk about how this is going in our neighborhoods. Is things functioning? Are people able to, get food? What exactly is going on in reference to the day-to-day needs?
Yeah, we're just getting back to a state of stability as it relates to the basic necessities of life, food, water, clothing, and, of course, shelter. So the answer to the question is no. Things are not yet stabilized, but we're getting there. We're getting there. There are tons of supplies being brought in via truckloads, via freaking airplanes. People are coming in any way they can to bring supplies and to bring help to the people so that those basic necessities can be covered. But we're getting there. But most of this is being done not by corporations, not by the government, but just out of the kindness of the hearts of everyday people. I'm right now at the Greenhouse International Church, and we've been operating a donation and distribution center here since Wednesday, since the day I was able to get out of my neighborhood. And today we've had trucks come from as far as actually Philadelphia. We had a truck to come in from Philly today, just from all over the country. Georgia guys built the trailer and brought in stuff from Georgia. So once they bring it here, it's a matter of us getting it to the people who actually need it most. But yeah, for the most part, it's getting back to a point of balance and stability in terms of people just getting what they need on a day to day. I think gasoline is a little scarce across the city. But for the most part, we're getting there. But we're not there yet. We're not there quite yet. Now, as far as the corporations making donations for Harvey relief, see, they'll make the announcement that they made the donation, but they never make the announcement about who the donation is going to.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So you've got several funds set up. The mayor set up a fund here. Of course, you've got Red Cross, and you've got all of these, we call them the double cross. You got all of these other organizations set up. So it's going to be difficult to track that money because we don't even know who they donated it to. But once we find out who they've donated the money to, then maybe there should be some type of accounting. But to be honest with you, Brother Elliot, I'm really not concerned with that as much as I'm concerned with us doing for us so that we leave no stone unturned, making certain that our people get what it is that we need. I think that's where we're at, you know, on that. I really haven't paid much attention to, you know, all the hype about Joe Osteen not opening up his church right now. I mean, I could just really give a damn about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching single moms wading through the water with, you know, infants trying to find higher ground. I don't have no time to focus on who's not doing what.
Okay.
My thing, if we organize our community properly and we mobilize as men in particular properly, then our people don't have to go without even in the midst of a storm like this. That's my mindset.
You know, Brother Derek, the only reason I mention that part of it is because, you know, once the water starts subsiding and they lobby Congress to donate hundreds of millions of dollars, probably billions of dollars for cleanup and restoration, that a good portion of that money should go to our communities to get some of these young men and older men some gainful employment.
I agree.
To kind of turn their life around. That's the only reason I threw that out there. But go ahead.
Yeah. I agree 100%. That's not just a relevant point. That is a critical point.
Okay.
I guess, but what I was speaking of, while we're in the throes of it, and people don't even have anywhere to stay, let's get our people stabilized first and foremost. But you're right, that's a whole nother fight that I definitely plan to be part of the offensive in fighting that fight. They're already giving out government contracts to businesses that aren't even local. And the way the FEMA regulations work is they're supposed to get preferential treatment the local businesses versus businesses that are out of town. But today, I think they told me that a $2 million contract went out to somebody from like Detroit or something like that. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So this is a money grab
mm-hmm.
for white folk, for white America. This is a land grab for developers. There are a couple of historic apartment complexes that are near downtown. People call them projects. I don't like the term projects, but they are predominantly black. Man, developers have been trying to get a hold of that property for many, many years. And so now that the floodwaters have driven those black people out of those apartment complexes, I mean, you can rest assured that they'll do everything within their power to make certain that they never come back so that they could take that land and build some kind of high-dollar structure on it. So, yeah, there's a whole nother fight that's going to have to take place after the hurricane. And hopefully we can even get started with the fight before another hurricane comes, because, brother, I don't think that this is a mere coincidence. Of course it's not. See, they give these hurricanes fake names like Harvey to try to take away from the fact that this is God's doing. So, yeah, the hurricane hit Texas and has literally decimated a great part of it. But we forget that the United States of America is the incarceration capital of the world. And the state of Texas is the incarceration capital of the United States of America. The state of Texas is the injustice capital of the United States of America. And if it's the incarceration and injustice capital of the United States of America, it is the incarceration and injustice capital of the entire world. So I don't know how much time we have before the next hurricane makes landfall. But what I do know is the name of your program is the perfect name and really should be the theme for Hurricane Harvey and all that we've gone through the past week or so. It's time for an awakening. And if this doesn't wake us up, I'm not quite sure what will.
One thing that you had mentioned is a couple of things you mentioned that I'd like to jump onto, but I want to go back to the point about the sense of humanity and Brother Elliot had raised that you've been working with black men, young black men, over some years now. Based off of this, have you got a sense, what's the sense of how the young black men are responding to this relief effort? Do you see a tone that is kind of different because of the event that occurred, even if the community specifically haven't been devastated?
Yes, 99% of young black men have been at the forefront of the rescue efforts, the relief and recovery efforts. All I see, for the most part, are young brothers trying to help who it is that they can. Earlier, we had a big truckload to come here to the donation center, and we needed help unloading it. All we had to do was put the word out via social media, and young brothers just start coming. If you tell them what to do, they'll do it. And many of them, this is almost like a prime, a perfect time for them to kind of find their purpose. You know, they're not walking through the community aimless, because the elders need water. Babies need diapers. You know, people have needs. And you have young men all across the city who are in folks' homes that have been devastated by flood waters, helping them take out the drywall, and take up the carpet and things of that nature. There are so many heroic deeds being done by young black men that it's beautiful to watch. But unfortunately, that's not what's making the headline. We're hearing stories that men are coming in from Louisiana in rescue boats, and they're being robbed by, you know, young black males and things of that nature. And so it's just a whole lot of propaganda, even in the midst of the storm. So, bro, that should let us know that Harvey or no Harvey, the way the media portrays us is not going to change. Harvey or no Harvey, the way people see our community, it's not going to change. Like I said, when these rescues were taking place, while the rain was still falling, you saw black folks rescuing white folks rescuing black folks. Again, it was a humanitarian effort, unlike I've never seen before in my life. And whether you black, whether you white, whether you brown, doesn't matter to me. If you go in and you can save my grandmother from dangerous flood waters, I thank you. But I'm going to tell you what happened up here yesterday. We had a brother from the New Black Panther Party who was in uniform holding security outside of the donation center.
Mm-hmm.
And two white guys pulled up in, they had a truck and they had a huge trailer hitched to the truck filled with supplies. They came in, they spoke to the pastor, told the pastor what they had. They said that they drove all the way from Dallas because they saw people in need and they had to do something. So they went outside, and as they began to back the truck up for us to unload it, one of them saw the brother in his Black Panther uniform. So he asked one of the other volunteers, what is he doing here? So the volunteer said, well, he's here. This is one of the brothers from the community. He's here helping. He's been here since day one.
Mm-hmm.
White boys went and got in their truck and drove clean off.
Wow.
Drove clean off. I'm not telling you something that I heard. I'm telling you something that I saw with my own two eyes. So they wanted to help the flood victims, but they didn't want to help the flood victims so much that whatever it is that they were going to give away had to pass through the hands of somebody that they didn't like. So the point that I'm making is the further, like, the storm made everybody sober. Like, there was an unusual sobriety in the city of Houston.
Okay.
Because everybody was humbled. But the further we get away from the storm and its impact, the more drunk people are beginning to become again with their racism, their classism, sexism, you know. We're going to be right back at square one.
And that's why it's so important to take, as you said, that and because you've been working with young black men to, you know, hopefully they see what they were. You know, hopefully we are able to project those images to override the propaganda so that they can see and feel the necessity of how helping and organizing can be a benefit, because as you said, the propaganda machine is not going to stop. And so if people were dying and needed those resources just because they seen this one person, that's going to prevent them from saving anybody else. That don't make sense.
Right.
But that's
right. Exactly. So, you know, anyone who thinks that, quote unquote, Harvey and its impact has the power to undo what 462 years of racism, bigotry, Jim Crow, and white supremacy has done to the psyche, not just of black people, but of white folks, then, you know, we're sadly mistaken. So, we're in the relief stage right now, but we're gearing up for this post-Harvey fight because, you know, when it comes to resources, you already know our people always end up at the back of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to make sure certain that we're a voice for all of our people to make certain that they get what they need in order to recover. Donald Trump came here on yesterday, I think it was, and what I'm telling my people is that, you know, this was a flood that impacted, and displaced a lot of white folks. I'm talking about $500,000 homes completely underwater. Never seen it before, bro. And I was telling them that that's who Donald Trump came to see about. He didn't come to see about you. So don't get it twisted. All we got is us. It was that way before Hurricane Harvey, and it's going to be that way afterward.
Brother Derek, the you've been doing that Blackmail Summit for a lot of years now. How are the guys doing? How are your guys? I know they reached out to you, if they could, to see how you were doing. Mm-hmm. How are they doing, the majority of them? Have you heard from a lot of the... Because I know you've been doing it over the years, but I'm quite sure you have volunteers and somebody... Okay,
go ahead. I've heard from many of them that are doing fine. Some of my guys got displaced, but they're stable now. Others I haven't heard from. It's been so crazy, brothers, and it's been such a dynamic situation that I think I'm just now hearing from just everybody who's in my family.
Okay.
Because we're just fresh out of this thing, and you brothers have to excuse me if I appear to be rambling, but I've been up for about 3 or 4 days in the throes of it, so if I sound a little tired, it's probably because I am. But yeah, I'm in the midst of it, bro. I'm in the midst of it. If I sound a little tired, please forgive me. But everybody appears to be well. I think the actual body count, let me not use that term, those who died in the flood is probably at, I think, about 43 statewide, if I'm not mistaken. I had to double check those numbers.
Okay.
But that being said, the mayor of the city, the black man by the name of Sylvester Turner, got a lot of flack for not instructing everybody and ordering an evacuation before the flood came. But you're talking about, I think, 2 trillion gallons of water falling from the sky. How do you evacuate 2.5 million people out of the city of Houston? And I think about 5 million people out of Harris County under 2 trillion gallons of water falling from the sky. Brothers, I'm so glad he didn't order that. He did not order that evacuation. Let me tell you why. Hurricane Harvey hit on Saturday morning. But the Monday before that Saturday, my wife and I just brought into the world a 7-pound, 9-ounce newborn baby.
Congratulations, brother.
Thank you. Praise be to Allah. So we brought the baby home on Thursday. And so on Thursday, I was trying to figure out what should we do, because I've been holed up in the hospital for many days. So I didn't have a chance to really follow the hurricane and see how serious it really was. And it hit Friday, the day after. So I'm going through this storm with a 3-day-old baby in the house. And had we been ordered to evacuate, I would have been on the road with a 3-day-old baby.
Okay.
You know, so there are just so many dynamics to it, brothers. So many dynamics to it.
And understanding your tiredness and I guess on two fronts, being a new father and in assisting the community in this whole relief time process. What is the black political representation in Houston? You mentioned the mayor. Is there others that are a part of the political process now?
Repeat the question, brother.
Is there other black representation in the political, council people or whatever?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. We've got a black mayor. We've got about 5 or 6 black council men and women. We have 2 black congresspersons, Congressman Al Green, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, and several state representatives. So I don't want to say we're well represented in local office, but we do have quite a few black elected officials, probably, when compared to other cities. And it's a little difficult to give them a report card grade right now because we're still in the midst of everything. But thus far, I have to say that the mayor has exhibited black excellence in his leadership thus far. He's done a good job thus far. But again, like I say, we're not out of the woods yet, so we have to see. But he's done a good job. I feel like if this mayor was white, he'd probably be on the cover of Time magazine this week. If he was white. He's not, and he falls in the same category as the rest of us, so he's gonna have to work twice as hard to get half as far.
Brother Derek, I know that you've been working hard and you're tired, but I know when you finally get a chance to lay down and reflect, this is an opportunity, and we're not there. We're in Philadelphia. But this is an opportunity for our people, because anything that happens to our people across the country, it hits us. It's us. But this is an opportunity for our brothers and sisters there to recreate themselves. And when I say recreate themselves, I'm talking about to develop a new mindset, a new approach, a new outlook on looking at ourselves and one another. You've been dealing with the Young Black Male Summit, Smarten Up, where you're doing things to help reeducate our youth. This is an opportunity because we don't know, I don't know the dynamic of Houston. I don't know how many schools have been flooded, how many won't come back. But it's an opportunity now for our churches, temples, mosques, recreation centers to start supplementing a lot of this stuff that they're learning and start education facilities. These are opportunities out of this tragedy where we can start maybe changing our diet. If they can't get their hands on a lot of pork products that they used to get, maybe we can start introducing new things to our people. Talk about the opportunity here for our people to do something different than what we were doing before. And plus, not only that, to start talking about issues, even in our places of worship, that might affect us moving forward. Just like you said, Brother Derek, nobody ever anticipated this much rain, seeing something like this in their life. This is something of catastrophic proportions and could have been a lot worse. So in situations like this, I think that we all need to talk about what we do in situations like this for our people and helping our people come out of these things and move forward. We don't want to, especially our people, we don't want to, the mindset that we have developed towards one another and in this system here of white supremacy, we don't want to go back to that. How can we, or you know, maybe it's a little premature, but talk about this situation here and moving our people forward.
Yes, a very good question. I think that in all adversity, there is opportunity. And when you strip away, everything else, and you come to the sobering conclusion that this is something that God permitted to happen, then the question we have to ask ourselves is why? Why? What is he trying to get us to see? What is he trying to get us to be prepared for? So, I mean, think about it. Every neighborhood was pretty much trapped within that neighborhood. You know, like, for instance, let me just give a personal example. I couldn't get out of my neighborhood to even get to my grandmother. My 87-year-old grandmother was trapped in her home by floodwaters. And I had to get some of my friends who still live in that neighborhood, my old neighborhood, to go and pick her up and rescue her for me, okay? Whoever came up with the slogan, every man for himself is a fool.
Okay.
Whoever came up with that slogan is a fool, because we are truly an interdependent people. We need one another. So I think that part of that recreation of self should be reflected in the way that we organize our community, the block-by-block organizing.
Okay.
When you organize block-by-block, you know your neighbor. You know your entire neighborhood. And so when you're trapped in that neighborhood by flood waters or whatever else, then you kind of know how to move. You know who lives where. You know who has an abundance of what. You know who has a dearth of what. So I think that it should impact the way we move in terms of the way that we mobilize, man. Every black neighborhood should be self-sufficient. For instance, if we live in the same neighborhood and we make a decision that, you know, we're going to put our money together and purchase a house, and we use that house strictly for the storage of beans and rice and so on and so forth, when we can't get to relatives from across town and they can't get to us, then we already have what we need. So every neighborhood needs to become self-sustainable.
Okay.
Even and even when it comes to the situation with the schools, some of these schools are now closed indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it is a mess because many of them had water up to the second floor. So what do we do? I mean, think about it. If your child's school is going to be closed for a month, do you have to sit around and wait for a public school to open in order for your child's education to continue? No, you don't. Right there in your own neighborhood, there are teachers. There are teachers. And, hey, let's start to have class. So, yes, sir, I think that being in survival mode, which is what everybody was in during these flood waters, it forces you to think creatively. And hopefully out of that creative thinking, we can begin to develop and form habits and patterns that will recreate us and the way we move and operate as a people. And hopefully it continues to drive the point home that at the end of the day, we are all we got. We all we got.
And I know this may be, again, you know, premature, and I definitely understand your stamina and tiredness, but we had heard earlier with Katrina that there were people who left Louisiana during Katrina to go to Houston, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a large body that was of people who had moved into Houston because of what occurred in Katrina. Had you experienced any of those who could be able to provide that kind of experience in relationship to the relief support that you can speak of?
Oh, yes, sir. Many close friends and many of my comrades in the struggle were quote-unquote Katrina evacuees. So they had a pretty good handle on what it is that we needed to do in terms of getting these relief efforts up. The difficult part about that is that so many Katrina evacuees, our beautiful brothers and sisters from New Orleans, are still suffering psychological trauma from what they experienced in 2005. I think it was 2005. And so when really any time it rains and there's a lot of flooding, you know, it's tough for them. It's tough for them.
Amen.
And quite frankly, I believe that on the other side of Harvey, it's going to be tough for Houstonians. Mm-hmm. But see, the Harvey flood, in terms of the amount of rain that fell, was worse than the Katrina flood. It was just managed better. So we didn't lose as many lives as were lost in Katrina. But, yeah, there are many, many Katrina evacuees that are on the ground. Many of them came to Houston and started nonprofits that were geared toward helping flood victims and victims of hurricanes and things of that nature. So they're a part of the family right now, and they're of great help during this particular time because of their personal experience with Hurricane Katrina.
You know, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You know, stories like the one that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Brother Derek, about the relief mm-hmm. truck pulling up and seeing a young man dressed in Black Panther clothing.
Yes.
And they then pulling off and pulling off from the church and leaving people without supplies. Those stories don't make the news.
Right.
They have other things on the news, like the Cajun. I read that story about the Cajun Navy saying that they was trying to rescue people, and they were being some were being robbed and seeing black people looting. Number one, I didn't know the Cajuns had a white folks from down in New Orleans had a navy. The Cajun Navy, what is that?
They got a navy, which means they got an organized, sea-driven process.
Well, you know what? And see, that's why I mentioned
basically the white boys from New Orleans that call themselves the Cajun Navy. I think they have some sort of training. I don't want to say that they don't, but they came in with their boats. And because they were the Cajun Navy, they were given carte blanche to do whatever they wanted to do to rescue folk. But you had black men who were trying to come in with boats from out of town as well. And I'm receiving calls saying that they're having a difficult time getting clearances from the local constabulary. But they just wanted to come in and help to save people, to help with the rescue effort. But there was even racism and discrimination in that, you know. White supremacy is everywhere, even in the midst of Harvey. But, yeah, the Cajun Navy. And I really only heard of one real incident where those people were bothered. It's out in the community where I am right now. I think they're saying somebody shot at them. 99.9% of our people have been acting civilized, especially during the storm. Especially during the storm. It's the 1% that begins to make 99% of the headline, you know. So we're not down here acting a fool like that. Of course you got some fools. You got some fools. Yeah, there were some folks running into the stores and doing a little looting, but that was minimal, bro. That was minimal. And it was blown way out of proportion.
Yeah.
Some folk were looting because they didn't have food in their homes.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't call that looting. I call that common sense.
Looting, right.
Because for a few days, there was no food. And if you didn't stock up and prepare for the hurricane, then you couldn't get out of your home. You couldn't get out of your neighborhood, so people started to panic. Now, I'm not making excuses for those who broke into the Cricket cell phone store and, you know, madness, all kind of madness, folks stealing boats and things of that nature. But that's minimal. That's minimal. For the most part, our people did what they were supposed to do. And there are so many stories of black people helping people that it completely overshadows and drowns out any negativity that's taking place on the part of our people.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're talking to Houston-based activist and organizer Brother Derek Muhammad. Is with us, giving us a little overview of the situation there with our brothers and sisters in Houston. And we're going to talk about a few other things dealing with his work down there before the flood. And I know he's going to continue it after these waters recede. We'll be right back. And again, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. We've got a couple calls on hold. We'll pick them up right after the break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective. If you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost. If you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Now, what's happening in all the urban cities across America is that you got a process in place right now in urban redevelopment. They're using five techniques to totally wipe you out. One is called gentrification. They're going into all these major cities that used to be majority black population populated cities, and they are erasing you in places like Detroit, Michigan, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. used to be the chocolate city. When I went there with President Carter in 1976, at that time, Washington, D.C. was 78% black. Now it's down about 42% black. Chocolate City is gone. Detroit, Michigan is going to be totally wiped out by immigrants pouring into the society. Since 1970 up to now, we've had 45 million immigrants coming to the United States. They came in over you, and they're displacing you. And then the second term they use besides gentrification to wipe you out is a thing they call privatization. You go into Detroit, Michigan, as they gentrify, they're going to take all the public resources and things that should be owned by the public, they're going to place them through privatization to the hands of the wealthy whites. White's going to buy your golf courses, your subway systems, your bridges, your tunnels. They're going to control your airports, your parks, your museums. Why? Again, because Anderson says, he who owns and controls the resources got the power. If you own and control nothing, you are totally, absolutely useless and expendable. And so, and that's why we have, nothing has changed for us, because we don't understand the system of gentrification and privatization. The other thing they're using to wipe you out in those cities is called metropolitan forms of government. Where now they're going to do regional form of government, which means that the whites in the suburbs can come into those black cities and set up some kind of consortium to control what goes on inside those cities so they can take the, extract the resources out of them. Another concept they use in those cities is called cool cities, which says cool cities mean bring in the gays and let them replace black folk. And so, and that's the fourth scheme they use on you. And in Detroit, Michigan, using that as an example again, the governor there has already set up in movement a system where he wants to go to the President of the United States, Obama, and ask him for a green card system where he can start importing Chinese from China to make Detroit, Michigan the biggest Chinatown in the United States. Even though that city had a 90% black population, they're going to bury blacks in Detroit, Michigan, underneath Asians coming into Detroit. And already in Detroit, Michigan, in Dearborn, right on the outskirts of Detroit, Arabs own 90%. 90% of all the businesses in the city of Detroit are owned by Arabs. Arabs and 90% black population must go to the Arabs to get what they want in terms of food, medicine, clothing, because they own all the, they own out of gas stations. You got 146 gas stations in Detroit, Michigan. Arabs now own 144 in a black city. Blacks own two gas stations out of 146. You own nothing. The rest, the hotels, are owned, and the 7-Elevens are owned by Indians. Asians are owning the laundries. They're owning the hair and wig shops, the nail shops. Blacks own nothing in a 90% black city. And that's why now Detroit went into poverty.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for Awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with Houston-based activist and organizer Brother Derek Muhammad is with us to tell us how our brothers and sisters are faring down in Houston, where he's been a lifelong resident there. We're talking about the issues down there, the challenges that our people are facing, and plans moving our people forward after the floodwaters recede. Brother Derek, one question before I go to the phones. Some of our elders that are sick, that have to go to dialysis units and things of that nature, that need insulin for diabetes, how are they faring? Because I know that a lot of these centers and all dialysis centers is all probably underwater. So have you heard any reports about some of the elders, how they're faring medically?
Yes, it was a very tough time for many of the elders who have medical complications such as diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and whatnot. As a matter of fact, some of the hospitals who generally tend to address those types of diseases had to be evacuated because they started to take on water and others began to lose power. I think we're getting, again, back to a point of stability where everybody's getting what they need. Lots of medical personnel have come from out of town to help with the workload, and I think things are faring a lot better for our sick elderly. But the untold story of it all probably will be with many of those who are in the medical industry that live in our community: black doctors, black nurses, black emergency medical technicians who came to the aid and to the rescue of so many of our elders so that they might make it through another day until they could get back to their normal routine.
Okay.
My 87-year-old grandmother has what's called, I think it's called COPD. It's a breathing disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. And so she takes breathing treatments several times a day. Well, when she lost power in her home, she could no longer take her breathing treatments. But a young lady who is a friend of my niece came to pick her up and brought her around to her home so that she could take her breathing treatments because she had power, but they were in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
And remember, I told you we couldn't get to her. So a lot of stories like that are going untold. But I think everybody's getting to the point to where they're okay.
Okay. Let's grab. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, you know, when you brought that up, and it kind of, Brother Derek, and a lot of these probably can't answer, but one thing that's always been when we were dealing with the police shootings and things like that, a lot of the social media people taking pictures, and I noticed that people were using their cameras. And I'm hoping that people are, they may not now be posting them because of dealing with, but I'm hoping these stories that you're giving us that mm-hmm. later we'll be able to see to kind of offset the propaganda that's being projected of the kind of support that we're giving each other in this kind of the type of mm-hmm. humanitarian support we're giving each other in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not captured by that, then we won't be able to see how we do act when we
need right. to. Right. That's a good point. I think there needs to be a roundtable discussion and organizing session, if you will, for all of our independent media persons, all of our social media experts, and there needs to be an organized effort to change the headlines. But again, once we're on the other side of everything and we're able to gather those pictures and create those stories, they really need to be told. And I'm glad you said that. I'm going to do my best to spearhead something like that to make certain that the story is told properly as it relates to how the majority of us responded to one another in times of need. And it goes back to what Brother Elliot was saying earlier. It gives us an opportunity to recreate ourselves.
Right.
Because you would think, again, 87-year-old elder in her home with no power, trapped by flood waters. What does she do? There's nothing that she can do, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've got good people, these are the same good people that the media paints as being, you know, hell, not worthy of breathing, young black folks, you know, in their early 20s. That's who came and got my grandmother and mm-hmm. took her to her home so she could get her breathing treatments and offered her home up to my grandmother. I don't even know the young lady.
Okay.
But again, it's a story that needs to be told, and there are so many of them. Mm-hmm. We just gotta stop focusing on the madness and start focusing on telling our story the way it should be told. And I'm going to do my best to make sure there's an organized effort to do this, to do that. So thank you for that suggestion.
Let's go to 773 area code. 773.
Yeah, brother, you got me?
Yes, a lot of noise in your background, sir.
Yeah, I know. I was just listening, Brother Eddie. He just put me on hold to listen. I couldn't get to listen on tonight.
Okay. Let's go to 215. 215 area code, 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, my brother?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard.
How you doing now?
Hey, Brother Derek. As-salamu alaykum, dear brother. How are you?
Wa-alaykum salam, beloved. I am well, thank Allah.
Praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Derek, it's an honor talking to you tonight as a student at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Just give me great pleasure to talk to you. And I do freely admit I did tune in. I missed like the first half hour, 45 minutes of your time on with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So I don't know if y'all discussed certain things already, but I'll just go ahead and, you know, say my piece. First off, I would encourage Brother Derek, all the listening audience of Time from the Awakening, to get the order from the final call to order disaster preparedness video. I ordered that about a year ago. That's what our people definitely need, because especially in times of like what happened with Hurricane Harvey and Katrina, that is a tape that our people should definitely have in their library, so to speak, because it gives you all key points on how to survive these kind of natural disasters. So I encourage our people to definitely purchase that, Brother Derek.
Yes, sir.
And also, too, on the local black radio station here in Philadelphia, the sister, and this is a sister, she's a nice sister, but she's a little wishy-washy, but she was very clear the other day, and she was clear about how the racism is unfolding in Houston. And she was saying how the district attorney down there in Harris County is already, and you know, as you know, Brother Dave, this is definitely geared towards our people, they're trying to enact laws that if you get caught even taking food out of a supermarket, they want to give you anywhere from 5 years to life in prison. I mean, these are some wicked people you're dealing with, man. And like the sister said, she said, these ain't no black folks that's stealing no damn TVs or radios. These people's trying to survive. She said, if the stores are underwater, the food going to go bad anyway. So why not let people get the food? Because the stores, cause as you know, the food is insured anyway. So let these people that's destitute get the food and everything like that in the store get paid for. They get paid through the insurance. But these people are so wicked, Brother Derek. They don't want our people to have nothing. Even in times of desperation, they want to throw heavy penalties and put our people in jail. I mean, these people are something else, brother.
That may very well be the reason that Almighty God Allah sent that hurricane this way. Because these people are something else.
Yes,
I got a
yes.
phone call from a young lady this morning who her son, he's special needs, if you will.
Yes, sir.
And he's 23 years old, but he has the mind of a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So he was allegedly caught stealing something out of a convenience store or something like that. He was allegedly caught stealing on yesterday. They took him to jail, and she said that the DA is trying to give her son 25 years.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. That's just what I'm talking about,
for,
Brother Derek.
For stealing, for shoplifting. So I'm gonna personally see about that case.
Please.
But yeah, bro.
Please.
Right now we have a curfew in effect from 12 a.m. to 5 a.m. Anybody out after between 12 and 5, you're subject to be pulled over, subject to arrest. So what you have right now is police state.
Mm-hmm.
You have a police state right now in the city of Houston. And, again, hopefully this is a sobering moment for our people and that we don't get back drunk.
That's right.
Drunk off of propaganda. Drunk off of our self-hatred, drunk off of our disunity and divisiveness and finding any and every reason that we can to try to not work with a brother, when at the end of the day, our unity, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us, is more powerful. Not only is it more powerful than what was called an atomic bomb back then, it's more powerful than any hurricane.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Brother Derek.
And this was the type of weather event, disaster, whatever you want to call it. This was the type of event where there was no one person who could help everybody. It really requires a hands-on or all-hands-on-deck approach. That's the only way you get through something like this, brothers.
That's correct. And you know, Brother Derek, I'm glad you said those words because, you see a clear pattern. I'll close these last couple of marks so Brother X and other people get on. See, you see a clear pattern with these people. Look at the two sisters that just got released from prison in Mississippi. The sister, two sisters, they spent almost 30 years, they really got life in prison for taking something that was worth $11. I mean, they give our people no breaks. These are some wicked demons, brother. They give our people no breaks. And this is why, like you just stated, brother, that's why Almighty God Allah, who came in the person of Master Fraud Muhammad, tomorrow praise to do forever, that's why he sent these storms to deal with these devils and stuff. Because, see, this is why I try to get our brother in Chicago to realize the white man with all his weapons of destruction, mass weapons of mass destruction, what good is his weapons when you saw what happened down in Houston, Texas? You can't right. do nothing when Al Reese's weather on you. You can have all the nuclear bombs, atomic bombs. They are totally useless. That's why I believe, like Brother Dick Gregory, our ancestor now said, it's a universal God force. And that's why I don't fear the white man. He'd kill us all. He can't. If the white man could have killed us all, he would have did it a long time ago.
This is true, brother. But also, the other side of that coin is that if we don't heed divine guidance, and if we don't wake up, unify, and do what we must to become an independent nation, then black folk are going to get a whooping too.
Oh, I agree.
I agree with you. The white America, the white man is going to get his. We see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have got to get focused on nation building. If not, we're going to get a whooping too. So white folks getting a hell of a whooping down here in Texas. But you know what? Black folk getting whooped too. Because I'm going to tell you something.
Yes, sir.
While Harvey was doing what Harvey did, there wasn't no black-on-black killings in the black community. Nobody's dropping in the black. It wasn't no gang violence in the black community while Harvey was doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question that we have to ask one another, does it take a damn hurricane to keep you from shedding the blood of your brother senselessly?
Yes,
indeed.
These are questions that we are going to have to visit once everybody gets stable, but we have to make certain that we get out of the way of the wrath of God, and the way for us to do that is to begin treating one another better as a people, and building institutions that serve one another, not depending on them to do for us what we have the power to do for ourselves.
And Brother Dick, last point and stuff. It's ironic you would mention that just now, because that's what I told Brother Ellen and Brother Richard last week. I said in this time of chaos, under this era of Trumpism, when you see white folks pretty much fighting themselves and they get punched by the weather, economic, this is definitely a time for black people to grab a hold, like the minister say, and do what we have to do, like you said, Brother Derek, the nation build. Because and I told this to Brother Ellen and Richard last week, if we don't, we're going to get the wrath of Allah as well. So it's important. Yes. We can't sit back and keep resting our laws, waiting for the white man to do for us what we should need to do for ourselves. We keep waiting for the benevolent white man or white woman to do for us that we have the power to do for ourselves. So you're right. We don't stop this killing each other and foolishness and self-hatred, we definitely going to get its wrath. And last point, Brother Doug, I pray to Almighty God allow for your grandmother's continued recovery and for her best health moving forward, Brother Derek. You're welcome.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you. Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard. Y'all brothers keep up the good work.
Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Brother Derek, you know, what the caller just mentioned about, you know, our people down there, and you mentioned it also about an opportunity for our people to reinvent themselves. A lot of the businesses that have been flooded in the community, we got a chance now to not have those same type of businesses come back, to have our businesses come back to replace those businesses.
I personally didn't mind seeing some of those businesses being looted.
Okay. It's an opportunity for us to not only bring our businesses back, but I've seen that you did a video there of black businesses as opposed to Negro businesses. We don't need Negro businesses. We need black businesses in our community.
Exactly.
Brother Derek, before two things I want you to do before you leave us, because I want you to give out, if you can, some names or some numbers of black agencies or black facilities where people can give donations. up in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. they get on TV and tell people to give to the Red Cross. Now, a lot of people, black people do that. But a lot of that money don't get to our people. You know, that's why I wanted to have you on to mention some areas where if people wanted to send donations, they could send it right to our people and where they can get help. So before you leave, if you don't have those handy, we'll take a break, and when we come back, you can give them out however you want to do it. But before you leave us, I want you to give out maybe some names, even your organization, because you've been dealing with the Young Black Male Summit. So if money is sent to you, I know that you will make sure that needy organizations get it. But we'll talk about that before we leave tonight. Brother Derek, I want you to talk about something that you had been dealing with your Black Male Summit, mm-hmm. and it relates to black mothers. You did a documentary on raising black boys. You talked about your experience of being raised by a young black mother. And we know the situation in our communities all over this country where young girls, young black sisters are raising these boys without men present.
Right.
You gave 10 tips, according to your experiences, for single black women in raising black boys. Now, if you don't have them in front of you, I'll read off some of the ones, and I want you to elaborate on these again, because for our listening audience that didn't hear you when you talked about it when you was on our program before, it's always good to rehearse these things and bring them up again, because I think they're important. Because in all of our families, we have these young sisters, and some of them might be our daughters, that are raising these young boys without a man present.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the list handy, I'll read some of the titles and maybe you can elaborate.
Yeah, I'm gonna need your help because I don't have it handy.
The first tip that you have for single women raising black boys is face reality. That's your first one.
Yes. Face reality. I feel as if, though, there are too many boys in our community who are over-mothered and under-fathered. And the reason they're over-mothered is because no matter how dire the situation is for black women in America, no matter what you go through as a black woman, you never know what it's like to be a black man in America. Only another black man knows what it's like to be a black man in this country. So it's very easy for you to underestimate what it is that your son is really up against once he steps out of your home and into society. So we try to get our young sisters to face reality. You know, they say that one out of every three black males will see prison in their lifetime if incarceration trends do not change. The reality is that society says that if you are a single mother and you are raising three boys, they've basically already assigned a bed to one of your sons. So we don't tell you to face reality so that you can succumb to it. We tell you to face reality so that you'll know how to guard against becoming a victim of this quote-unquote so-called reality. So if the mom doesn't face reality, then she can't properly prepare her son for the reality of living life as a black man in America. Too often as parents, we want to sugarcoat the way the world is to our children, but we do them a disservice and we put them at a disadvantage when we do that, because you know what? They're going to find out anyway. So either we can send them into the world prepared, or we can send them into the world and they'll have to find out the hard way. And unfortunately, too many of our black males are finding out the hard way. So we got to be real. We got to be real.
The second one you mentioned is keep him busy.
Yes, you got to keep him busy. That's a pretty simple one. Two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. And the space that needs to be occupied with positivity is most definitely his mind. So I've never really been a heavy proponent of little league sports and things of that nature, because I always felt that we focus too much on pushing our young boys to develop their bodies but not develop their minds. But I've kind of changed my position on that. I believe that little league sports programs are good. First and foremost, they keep our young people busy. They keep our young boys with goals. They're being taught the power of unity. You know, when you play on a team, they're being taught the concept of hard work and how there are rewards for hard work, like hard work pays off. So whatever you got to do, make certain that your son is involved in a extracurricular activity that he loves. Because if he loves it, he won't mind spending his time doing it. And if he's playing football and running track, you know, he got to go to football practice, then he got to go to track practice. Hell, by the time he gets home, he's too tired to go outside and get in any trouble. So keep him busy. As long as you're able to control his environment, make sure you keep him busy, and it pays off in the long run.
You, number three that you mentioned here, that you share with the young ladies, is teach him work ethic.
Yes, teach him work ethic. And the way you do that is when your son asks you for something, he could be 4 years old and he's asking you for a toy. I don't know what it is. Make him do something to earn it. It may be something as little as organizing your shoes in your closet. You know, I don't know. But make him do something to earn it. And when he does something to earn that toy or to earn that pair of sneakers or whatever it is that you know you're going to purchase for him anyway, if he goes and he rakes the leaves, whatever, then the way that computes and is calculated in his mind is he actually believed that he did something in order to receive that reward, and it diminishes the notion that you get that somebody owes you something or that you can get something for free out here. So we have to teach them the rewards of hard work, and when they do something wrong, you know, withhold what it is from them that they want. But make the boy work. I mean, make him do yard work. Make him do something. I mean, something, instead of just giving him what it is that he asks for. Because when he gets out into the world, if he has that expectation that something's going to be given to him and he's not going to have to work for it, he'll be handicapped for the rest of his life. And when you do that, if you develop a strong work ethic in your son, I think that, you know, you can rest well. When you're no longer here, you know he'll be all right. Why? Because he knows the value of hard work. But we got to start teaching them that at a very young age.
You have number four, encourage father and son relationships.
Yes, that's a big one. In most cases where you have a single mom raising a son, it's because of a failed relationship. And if your son's father is incarcerated, it may be a situation where he lives across town and has another family. You know, too often we allow grown folks' madness to impact the lives of our children. So what we have to do is we have to be non-emotional about this thing and realize that no matter what your son says to you, not only does he want his father in his life, he needs his father in his life. And so if there is any chance, any hope, or any opportunity for him to have that relationship with his son, make certain that you do what you can to foster that, to develop that, to push that, to promote that. You don't want to be the one that stands in the way of your son and his father, because when he gets older and he realizes that that was the case, then I've literally seen sons show hatred towards their mothers because they felt like the mom didn't give the son a chance to have a relationship with the father. So let's be mature and let's be adult about this thing and not let that get in the way. Make certain that you do everything that you can to make sure your son stays connected with his father no matter what the circumstance is.
You got number five is study his father.
Yeah, right. Again, this requires a lot of maturity, and it requires a non-emotional approach. Every child is given 46 chromosomes. 23 come from the child's mom, and the other 23 come from the child's father. And to say that you hate your child's father is almost like saying that you hate half of your child, because those attributes will be, have been passed down to your son. So what you should do is study your son's father, see what his strengths are, and see what his weaknesses are. And wherever you see the strengths, then you feed that. You know, for instance, if your son's father, let me go out on a limb. Let's just say that he was a pimp or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But while that is a negative thing, you have to have a certain set of skills in order to be able to accomplish the said above. That means he's a good manager. Maybe your son will grow up to be good at management, and so you put him in a position where, of course, you don't want him to become a pimp, but you put him in a position where you feed those positive aspects that you see the father exhibited, and whatever he may have a propensity toward that might be a weakness, you know how to guard against that. I hope I'm making sense.
No, it clearly does. Before I move to number six, Brother Richard, you want to throw anything in the mix?
Oh, no, I like to hear, you know, to continue to develop this. It's just interesting, and it definitely is helpful.
You know, and I never looked at it quite like that, what you just explained about studying the opposite person in the relationship. In my case, it would be like a woman here, but you when you direct these things towards the young ladies, study his father, because even negative attributes can be changed positive if you look behind and see the strengths of that. So I understand. I clearly understand what you're saying, and it's, I never looked at it like that, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you for that perspective.
My father was he was a street hustler, but he was a great communicator.
Okay.
And so I can see my father in myself, not the hustling side, but the being able to communicate ideas. What it is that my father may have used for bad, that same attribute I could use for good, and that's what I try to do. But you have to non-emotionally study the other parent in order to be able to glean, you know, from that which is useful.
Okay.
Number
six.
Genetics are powerful.
Number six, you got fine mentors, which you have become to a lot of youth down there in Houston, but you have fine mentors as number six.
Right, and that's easier said than done. In my personal dealings with single moms and trying to help them, advise them, and so on and so forth, sometimes it's more difficult for them to find mentors than we think. But you almost have to be like a hustler. When I say a hustler, meaning you have to be very, very, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but you have to have like a find a mentor for my son by any means necessary type of, you know, attitude. But sometimes it's difficult to find mentors because single moms are all they're all looking in the same direction. Like, for instance, you know, Derek Muhammad is a pretty, I'm known for mentoring young boys, but I can only mentor them one at a time, two at a time, you know. So if everybody's looking to me, but you're looking beyond the bus driver who lives next door, who's a good brother, then, you know, it's not going to work that way. So sometimes a mentor for your son can be found in an unlikely place. And let me say, make sure that you vet properly anybody that you would turn your child over to. Mm-hmm. Let me say that. But the mentorship model needs to be tweaked. You know, just like we talked about genetics, and we talked about how every child has a genetic predisposition towards certain things. I think the the mentorship model needs to be tweaked, and it needs to be geared toward the interests of the child. For instance, if you have a child who's interested in architecture, then I think it makes complete sense for you to find someone who's in that particular field to mentor him. It's good to take young brothers to play basketball, baseball, and, you know, take them to the zoo. That's cool. But to really, really mentor a young black boy successfully, and if you want to do it long term, you put him with somebody who's doing what he loves and is being successful at doing it. And in most cases, that mentorship relationship will end up being real productive. So find out what your son loves to do. Find out what he does well, and find a mentor to mentor him in that. And I think that the I think we'll do well with that kind of model.
Number seven, you have spiritual foundation. Now I notice you don't have religious foundation. You have spiritual.
Exactly.
You have spiritual foundation. Go ahead.
Exactly. Yes, make certain that your son has a spiritual foundation. And you pointed out that I did not make note of any religious type of foundation. I was raised as a Christian my entire life, and I decided that I would revert to become a Muslim at the age of 21, I think I was. But even in my becoming a Muslim, I still already had a spiritual foundation. So my Islam was built on top of my foundation as a Christian, because it was a spiritual foundation. So I was always taught about God, and the way I was taught about God in the church caused me to have questions. Well, the church couldn't answer those questions. The mosque could. However, had I not been given some spiritual foundation, I would have never even known what the question. But the point I'm making is, these are not our children. These are God's children. And so in every last one of our children is God. As a matter of fact, we have to teach them that they themselves are God. And we should stop underestimating our children's desire to want to have a relationship with God. And so if you can give your child a spiritual foundation and you give him something to build upon, then when he's in a time of trouble and you can't get to him, you can't help him, then he has a place of refuge. And the most powerful place of refuge that I believe that we all have is God. So make certain that you give your child a spiritual and a cultural foundation. Hopefully I didn't give away one of the other tips with the cultural foundation.
Let's go to number eight. Get him off the breast.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one. That's a big one. Off the breast means that too often, because a mother's nature is to be a nurturer, and it is her nature to be consoling to her son. It's her nature to be that place of refuge for her son. Sometimes we just don't know when to cut it off. And so I remember seeing a meme on social media. It was a mom, and she... You know how you hold a two-year-old baby on your hip? There was a lady holding a grown man on her hip. And she was basically saying, the meme says something to the effect of, you know, this my baby, I just can't let him go. Too often we don't know when to take these boys off the breast. We don't know when to let them grow up and be men. And in order to do that, you have to take a hands-off approach as a mother. Certain things that he goes out and gets himself into, you got to let him get himself out of that quicksand in order for him to grow up. So what I say is, you know, the formula is you teach him how to swim. And once you taught him how to swim, You have to learn to throw him in the water and walk away, knowing that you've taught him well. Stop diving in the water every time to save him, because what will happen is before you know it, you'll look up and he'll be 34 years old still thinking that no matter what he does, his mama is going to be there to rescue him. Until the one time he gets into that one situation where he realizes she ain't coming. And too often he's already in handcuffs, shackles. Mama can't come get you now. So you got to at some point take him off the breast and teach him, and allow him to be a man. That's the only way he's going to survive.
Number nine was the one that you that ties in with number seven, which is cultural foundation.
The cultural foundation, most definitely, most definitely. Knowledge of self creates love for self, and love for self creates the desire to do for self. Don't allow your son to grow up to be culturally confused. He must be proud of his blackness. He must be proud of his heritage. He must know his history. And again, he must know his history. Because if all we are raising are black children that study white history, then we have a problem on our hands. So if there is a community center in your city where cultural lessons are being taught, take him there on a regular basis. There are many documentaries that are out right now on Netflix and YouTube and whatnot. Make certain he knows what Black Wall Street is and is able to answer the question if someone asks him, young man, do you know what Black Wall Street is? And he can break that down for him. Make sure he knows who Nat Turner is. Make sure he knows who Ida B. Wells is. Make sure he knows who Sojourner Truth and who Harriet Tubman is. Make sure he knows who the Honorable Marcus Garvey is. And there's so many information sources that can be used to creatively teach this to your children that we have no excuses. But make certain that your son has a cultural foundation. There's nothing worse than growing up a black man in America ashamed of your blackness.
And the 10th one is encourage entrepreneurship.
That probably should have been the first one. That probably should have been the first one. Yes. You know, wealthy white people, they encourage entrepreneurship from a very young age. When you drive through a well-to-do neighborhood and you see these little white girls outside with a lemonade stand and they're selling lemonade for 10 cents a cup, well, of course, you know their parents. That their parents have resources, so they don't need the money. But what they're doing is they're instilling the entrepreneurial spirit in their children at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find creative ways to do the same thing. Now, you're talking about women raising black boys. Now, the black male is the most unemployed and the most underemployed race gender in America. Not only is that not going to change, that is going to get worse. So when Donald Trump says that he's going to bring jobs back to America, then he says that he's going to go and revitalize the coal mining industry. Well, hell, how many black coal miners do you know? You know, I mean, I'm sure there are some, but I don't know one black coal miner. The point I'm making is when he says that he wants to bring jobs back to America, he ain't talking about bringing no jobs back for no black men. He's talking about bringing jobs back for his own. So right now we are in a position where either we do for self, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches, or suffer the consequences. So don't teach your son that he should grow up, get a college degree, get an education, and go get a job. No. You teach your son that he has to always be ready willing, and prepared to make a job for himself, because by the time he is of age, that will most definitely be his only option. We must encourage entrepreneurship at a young age in our boys, because if we don't make jobs for ourselves, they won't have jobs. And if they don't have jobs, then they resort to other activities that they will that they believe they have no other choice except to go out and commit crime or sell drugs or whatnot. So we want to make certain that that does not happen. So, again, encourage entrepreneurship in your children at a very young age.
Brother Derek, I'm glad that you went over those things with our listening audience that might help a young lady that's listening to the program, because I know that you deal with these things a lot during the Black Male Summits, and even the chance when you get to speak to the young black females, young sisters down in the Houston area. Before we let you go, Brother Derek, any organizations, or just give out the organization that you're dealing with the Young Black Male Summits. In fact, did you have one this year?
I did. I've actually had two this year.
Okay.
I had one in Miami, Florida that went very well. And we had ours here in Houston in May.
Oh, so you've been kind of moving around a little bit with it.
Yeah. That being said, I would really love to bring it to Philadelphia, God willing, in 2018. So we can discuss that offline, and I would love to partner with you brothers to make that happen.
That sounds good.
Great.
That sounds good.
Yes. Okay, so listeners, consider it done. We just have to work out the details.
Okay.
But as far as organizations that people should donate to here in the city of Houston during Harvey relief, the number one organization, I believe, would be the Nation of Islam. And we're doing a lot out of our mosque, Muhammad Mosque number 45, collecting goods and not waiting for the people to come to pick them up, but actually taking them out into these areas where it's needed most. I saw a Russell Simmons gave a $5,000 donation to the mosque here. And so that website is www.noihouston.org. That's okay. www.noihouston.org. So if you want to make a contribution to Harvey relief efforts to make certain that contribution gets to the people, donate to www.noihouston.org.
Okay. Houston. Good. And I'll make sure that posted to our Facebook page also. So
thank
folks
you.
That's looking at it can send donations directly to our people and to our neighborhoods where they know that it's going to help somebody look like them.
Yes, sir.
Brother Derek, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, man. I'll be in touch with you for what you just mentioned. And plus, just to give updates, come on periodically, talk about some things. You know you're always part of the family. You always part of the family, brother.
Yeah, I'd love to come back maybe in a couple of weeks or so to give an update on what's going on with Harvey, because we're still in the throes of it. So I'd love to give a follow-up update if you brothers would have me.
Good. That sounds great.
I definitely appreciate it. And I think our audience would, too.
Brother Derek.
Thank you, brother.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Peace.
We'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Ball Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Peace to the Professor Griff of Public Enemy. People keep saying black people need to do this and black people need to do that. Well, frankly speaking, I think it's a whole lot of talk, a whole lot of philosophy, and a whole lot of head nodding. But where is the action? I'm suggesting everyone that's within the sound of my voice, we need to get on board with this national black economic empowerment movement. Let's buy black, 365.com. That's Let's Buy Black, 365.com. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, and I'm out. Peace.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do
time for an awakening. I want to thank our guest tonight that was with us, Houston-based activist, organizer, and he's an author also. Brother Derek Muhammad was with us to talk about the situation with our brothers and sisters down there in Houston. And, you know, what we can do to recreate ourselves after this catastrophe that happened down there to our people. Houston is the fourth largest city in this country. It took over for Philadelphia about 5 years ago, Richard?
Hey.
Something, I believe so. Yeah, something of that. So it's the fourth largest metropolitan area in this country with millions of our people there. It's a chance now for our people to do something different. Change our mindset. I think that's why these things are happening. It's a warning to our people. I truly believe that, that we need to do something different than what we've been doing. We've had a mentality that we've been exposed to and raised up on, so to speak, since we've been in this country over 400 years. It's time for us to do something different. It's time for us, our people, as we say, when the program starts to develop a new paradigm. It's high time. It's been past time. We have to do this. Richard, you got some time to stay over a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
Good. Let me take a call here, too. 646.
Hello, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Good show. Listen, man, I'm calling about something that's really going to affect our community this week. This announcement on Tuesday in regards to this DACA with this wingnut Neanderthal in the office. Let me tell you something. If he repeals that DACA, you're going to have a lot of trouble for our people. I'm not talking about that Baba Louie, because I don't give a damn about them. But I'm talking about the Africans who have been here illegal and who have bought into this system and who have shown themselves to this country. It's going to be, if this fool goes and do what he's capable of doing, it's going to be mass roundups. And it's going to cause a lot of problems in this country economically. And I don't really think that, honestly, our community understands what's going on or have a clear insight into how it's going to affect a lot of things economically. And we better be very, very observant of this, because if we're not, you're going to see mass forms of crime and everything, because a lot of these Mexicans and the rest of them, when they find out they're not going to be able to keep their job and stay in this country, they're going to start attacking people. And you know, we are not prepared to handle ourselves with a violent onslaught against us as a people. Now remember, you got these white nut jobs, you know what I mean, that's doing their thing. So it's going to be a real, real serious conflict going on in this country that I don't even think El Dumbo realized. And nobody's really talking about it, you know. They're making the narrative about, well, they should stay here and blah, blah, blah. But they're not looking at the narrative of what's going to happen when the show is over. And this guy says, hasta la vista, baby. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I follow you.
What's going to be the response of black folks?
Well, I respond so far. I mean, and if I'm not mistaken, they've been saying that under Obama, there's been deportation, you know, and that's, I haven't heard in relationship to the African or the Caribbean community, even the Asian community, as far as children, children are born here, but the large amount of deportation. I get that, but it's in relationship to what we've been saying.
The relationship is those that are being deported did not bring themselves within to the community and identify themselves. So, you know, people are not going to really reply to them in a certain fashion. It's those who came in and reported themselves, gave these people money, and did all this thing to be able to stay here, and on top of the fact that they got to re-up it every 2 years and give these bastards more money, are now going to be arbitrarily kicked out of this country because of this twisted clown in office. That's what people are not putting into context. Nobody cares about, honestly, those that are being deported because they haven't identified themselves as illegal aliens. It's the ones who identified themselves as legal aliens that the issue is going to come into play, that we have to address and deal with. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look at what's going on in regards to Houston and all that's happening there. Oh, some people are in a very precarious situation to get caught out there. You see what I'm saying? So it's a lot at stake that, you know, we as a people don't realize, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know what I mean? Because I've been given a lot of thought, you know, listening to a lot of people talk about this whole leadership that we've had over the last 35 years. And I must tell you this. As I reflect over my 30-some years in this movement, in all honesty, we really haven't had no real leadership to move us forward as an African people. Now, maybe to become an Americanized Negropean, I would say yes to a certain extent. But I mean, as far as being an African, I reflect back, man, to a period of time 30-some years ago, almost when I was with Sister Soulja, and Bill Clinton did her thing to her. And I remember how all these so-called black leaders of today held her down from responding to that Bill Clinton in the manner that she was able to respond. And from that point on, them same Negroes have been in the spotlight. And the bottom line is these new young crop of individuals are bought and paid for by the oppressor. Soldier was not owned by no one because I was in the group that she was the head of. And I can tell you this, we didn't get no money from nobody. The only affiliation that we had was with Benjamin Chavis, with the group that he was with at the time that he was head. And we would use his office space to do certain things and have meetings. But our thing was in the street and at the Harlem Y on 135th Street in Harlem. You understand what I'm saying? But I'll never forget when she made her speech and Bill Clinton attacked her. Let me tell you, Farrakhan, Jesse, Al, Calvin Butts, Bob Law, a whole bunch of these so-called leaders got her in a room and told her, look, leave it alone. What we will do is take care of it. And them Negroes didn't do anything. And now we in the position that we in, and you know something? All of those Negroes are millionaires. And black youth are in the same position that we... This is from somebody who was right there. I was right there. I can tell you that. And I left the movement after that and just started mentoring kids and being an observer. But I will tell you this. If she would have been able to respond to Bill Clinton, it would have did a hell of a lot for not only young black women, but young black people, because it would have showed a different form of independent leadership. And I'll give you a brief name of some of the people that was part of the group. The mayor of Newark, Roz Baraka, the writer Kevin Powell, a brother that I think you know, Elliot, Brother Haq Islam, the founder of Universal Records, another brother that I think that you may have had on your show, Eric Muhammad, who now goes by the name Eric Teray Muhammad. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, that was, those were brothers and sisters, and a couple of other sisters who were just as dynamic as Lisa that was in the group. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I know for a fact over these 30-some years where we are as a people and where we could have been. And all I'll say to you is this. All of those Negroes are millionaires, and our people are still suffering. And this whole movement with Black Lives Matter and the rest of these groups are bought and paid for by the Soros of the world, and they're not going to lead us to no African thought or independence. And that's just a fact. Because I would love, and I listened to all of them, and none of them have shown the African nationalist, pan-African thought that Sister Soulja showed. All of them basically tried to skirt around nationalism and pan-Africanism, but all of them are dealing with one specific thing, integrating into this white man's society and making him treat them fairly. And you can never get a cracker to treat you fairly without your foot on his neck.
Well, the only thing I have to say in reference to that, Jay, is I think that you painting some people with a broad brush, because to say that, to put Jesse Jackson or to put Minister Farrakhan, Louis Farrakhan, into the same boat with Jackson, and to say that he wants to integrate our people into American society, that's not right.
So, bro,
now, see, I'm not
not arguing about.
I'm just stating the fact.
Their whole agenda, is pushing us forward in that direction, of getting along with this cracker.
No, I can't agree with that.
No, let me finish this one point. The reason why I say that about Minister Farrakhan is I really don't have too much of a problem with him, but he talks about separation, right? Now, if you really feel about separation the way that you do, then why haven't you over this period of time, and I think he may be doing it now, I'm not sure, why haven't you bought land and set up a system in place whereas your members could be able to go and build this independent society? Because if you think about it, if you really, really think about it, there's a lot of places to whereas you could go and do that, honestly, in the United States of America, if you so choose to wish to do that. You could talk about places in Wyoming. You could talk about places in North Dakota. You could talk about a lot of things. You can even take over communities to whereas you have monsters at. You understand what I'm saying? And you have your people at, and just do the necessary work. But see, these things, and the reason why I say them is because I've witnessed it.
Well, Jay, let me leave you with this,
Elliot. If you're really, really about that, I don't understand why you can't go like a place where the minister is in Chicago and just take over a whole section of the south side of Chicago and put all of your members in that community and govern yourselves in a sense, and you get up, you own all the businesses, and you get up and you do your jobs, which you do for the government, the city, or whatever. I don't understand why that's never happened. That's why I make this critique of, in regards to that, because it should be no reason if that's your central place where you can't just say, like the Chinese, the Japanese, the Italians, and the rest of these communities have a central place that's Indiatown, Koreatown, and all of their town. Why can't there be a Nation of Islam time? I'm just asking the question, brother.
Well, let me say this, and I'm not a Muslim. Don't profess to be a Muslim.
I know you're not.
Or any religion of that, but that's neither here nor there. Let me say this in reference to Ms. Farrakhan in particular, as compared to Jackson or Sharpton or any of the others. And you raised the issue of them, Nation of Islam separating and getting other areas and starting communal living. I think in some areas that is being done, but this is what I want to say. We come from a civilization or civilizations, black civilizations that were based on cooperation and communal living. And Richard, you can jump in on this at any time. Mm-hmm. I think that when we talk now about our situation and we voice what we need to do about it, whether it's you, Jay, Richard, myself, or Minister Farrakhan, then it's a collective that's necessary to make that engine run. It's not individuals that's going to turn this tide. It's a collective. So when you talk about separation, it has to start in the mind first. I can't just physically separate my body and my mind is still in a bunch of foolishness. Because if I do separate my body, wherever I am, I'm going to conduct myself the same way I was conducting myself when I was among heathens. We have to do this first in our minds. The physical part of it will come later. It has to be done first in the mind. So when you got people encouraging our people to change their mindset, to unlock the shackles that this man has put on our mind, you got to give those people respect. Sure, you can look at individuals, oh, he's rich. And that, listen, that's somebody else. That's whatever person has to answer for and dwelling in riches, that's up to them. I'm not even focusing in on that. Unless they're abusing other black people, then that's something different. But when you got somebody that's encouraging our people to change their mindset, to adopt sovereign principles, to look forward to us governing ourselves once again one day, that's definitely the principles that our ancestors had when they came here. Our ancestors wanted to be free. They didn't want to be around this man. We were forced to come here. They wanted to be free and independent people again. So the best thing any leaders can do or any professed leaders can do is encourage our people to adopt that mindset again, to have our people become free. We don't need to be under this man's hand, dictated what we can do, what we can't do. I mean, we're not children. Some of our people, they want to be integrated, assimilated. That's what they want. And they only want it because that's all they know. They love this man. But we can do better than that as a people. And whenever you have our people encouraging that, somebody or some group or some number of people is going to take those principles and move on them. It's only going to grow. Those are seeds that are being thrown around and planted. Those are seeds. Whether it's Minister Farrakhan throwing around seeds, whether it was, what was the brother's name that passed away under mysterious circumstances?
Where?
You know, he was from the Nation of Islam. Oh, man, the name just... whether it was Khalid Muhammad, whether it was any of those men that was throwing around seeds, those are seeds that those men were doing. And they're going to take root. They're going to take root. They're taking root now. Now, that other stuff, the watered-down type of Negro behavior that some of these so-called leaders are talking about, that stuff is going away like high-button shoes. Ain't nobody listening to them no more. There's nobody listening to them. Nobody listening to them.
Brother Jay, what you raise in how you come to your conclusion just raises a historical understanding, because I thought at that time, and maybe now is not the time, but I have to go back and look. But at the time Sister Soldier did make that pronouncement was the time when Jesse was running. And at that time, the Nation of Islam was providing the security for Jesse. And then the whole discussion
that Sister Soldier, when she raised the question of how, which was at the same time, rap was being, which was had its most prominent projection in having a serious communication and galvanizing and organizing effect around young people. And Sister Soldier was able to take that message as a political, I mean, as you said, y'all were strong. She was strong in being able to make a clear analysis, which rap music was already doing, about the condition that that generation was in, and being able to give in the spotlight. So that's what I seen that, and they were trying to get, Jesse was trying to get the Rainbow Coalition. Also, if I'm not mistaken, around that same time, that the whole thing with Gaddafi offering the nation the money that was going on. So the mechanism of the State Department was the intelligence community, and its hitman was on all of them at that point. So that was, so I might be off on that. But one thing that I think I am also clear coming, and I try not to deal with, because your other point for me is when we're talking about the Pan-Africanist conscious, not just consciousness, but organization ability to gain political and economic space within this global reality of white supremacy as it is. I look at things from that organizational perspective. So when I do that, I don't look at the individual that leads the organization more than the nature and the design of the organization itself. Therefore, I'm talking about the nation. And one thing that makes me say the legitimacy of the Nation of Islam as an American African religious organization that gave birth, that was given birth of a national position in North America specifically. One, it was homegrown. Two, you could see symbols when the nation was dealing with reparation, and it as a nation went to the UN and to Switzerland, I believe, as a representative for the, even if it was just speaking on its own, it was representing as a nation in relationship to reparations, the reparations. But the most important thing was, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're in New York, the person that I respect up mostly, Baba, what's his name? Who basically taught us about Egypt and Kemet. Developed, especially in New York, First World Alliance, was the elder.
You talking about John Henry Clark?
Why his name just left? Just from Ethiopia.
Dr. Ben.
Dr. Ben.
Mm-hmm.
When Dr. Ben looked around to who he was going to give his library to, who did he give his library to? Dr. Ben, is you can't find no Pan-Africanist, nationalist, sovereign thinking that was centered in his historical context other than him. And who he gave his library to was to the nation. And so if he felt that that organization is the only organization that has the infrastructure that should be able to be the repository of his work, that's, you know, for me, that provides the legitimacy of the nation. And all of us, all of our organizations have contradictions. But, you know, that, you know, just gives, you know, that's for me what says, regardless of the leadership or the leader, the organization and its history and what it represents to African people, as far as being a symbol. And I like the way you said that, Elliot, as far as being a symbol and developing those seeds. The nation is one of a few, but But even that isn't strong enough to go up against others. And to the other points that you made as far as the possibilities, there may be some strategic reason, but I'm not aware of. Why not center in one place like the Mormons or, you know, or the what's this, the Amish? Why they, you know, it might not be strategic in that compared to what the African Hebrews did going to Liberia and then ending up in Dimona.
Hey, Richie, let me tell you, come on, bro. We've been in this for too long. If there was a call today for brothers honestly to separate from this white man, to give up their jobs, give up their position, to start a real nation, I would honestly say 70% wouldn't do it.
I was just being nice
because I know your boys from Philadelphia, they call up and try raggy. But I know it's 90 and you know it's 90. The position is this. And I always say this, and I really believe this. It has to take authentic young leadership to move a movement forward for our people. You know, there's a cat that I really wish you would get on your show, Brother Elliot. His name is Adam Jackson out of Baltimore. He's the type of brother that's talking about what African nationalist, Pan-African youth need to be talking about. The Lisa Gossett, the Delray McKesson, and the rest of them freak souls, they're not liberating us into anything that will challenge white supremacy. You have to be able to defend yourself against white supremacy, and in order to do that, you can't be in a position to where white folks are able to control the narrative when you put forward the narrative. That's what the problem is. See, that's why I always respected Lisa and what we were trying to do, because we were not under the control of white folks. We wasn't getting no money from white folks. Everything we was getting was from the community. The thing was, as you try to respect the elders, what you do is you listen to them. You don't move forward on the level that you should based on a degree of respect. And that's what happened. Because like I say, and I may be wrong, if she would have challenged Bill Clinton, it would have motivated the youth in the manner that happened when the Panthers came out back in the day. Because you would have had an example of a young person standing up against the almighty powerful and not only spanking them, but serving them. Because she would have taught him a new a-hole like no one ever would imagine.
And she was doing that, though.
She was coattailed. You see, and you know, the thing is, what I most respected about her was she went about the business of doing her work, and she realized that the challenge she was up against, and she did not attack them. She didn't do anything that would hurt the people. And believe me, she could have really done some damage by exposing them clowns for who and what they are. But what she did was she went on, she wrote her books, and she did whatever lectures, she raised her child and all of that.
And took those young women to Africa. I mean, they were had that youth program that you know they took a series of
took them ahead of camp. She worked with P. Diddy, which I know was a challenging thing, but she went about the business at hand of doing what she had to do. And you know, the bottom line is, we are now in a situation to where, as what's going to happen to our people when these so-called Negro leaders start kicking the bucket? Who is going to be in place that's going to be authentic, that's going to move us forward in a pan-African and nationalist way and not lead us into a way of integration, assimilation, and all of that? Because the reality is this. We may not want to accept it, and we may not want to deal with it. But these young leadership folks out here today, they ain't got a clue, and they ain't about the business of separating from this cracker. They want a piece of what this cracker has to give and has to offer, and they will sell us out. Because if they was really about the business, I heard somebody say this today, and I thought about it. A couple of years ago, Tony Brown said to all of the black fraternities and all of the black sororities and the church groups, cancel your conventions and put all of that money that you're spending in and put it in a pot and build your own hotel and convention center. Do you think the Negroes have done that?
But when they were told to do that at the point when the this integration bill was passed, they were told to do that. That even the black hoteliers told them, who had black hotels in New York and Detroit, they created the hotel associations to build up the hotels that they had so that they could accommodate them. Those same groups that you mentioned decided that they wanted to go to these other hotels. And because they made that decision, those hotels failed. So I don't see how on the back end, that's the front end, on the back end, now that they've been going, they were going for, by the time Tony Brown said that, 30 years, a convention, one convention almost every year or every other year, and therefore another generation or two, where they're going to change their strategy in relationship to who they were going to economically support. Same thing with black, you know, I use the examples of the black baseball, the Negro League, or Claude Anderson uses the example of the transportation, the bus lines, black bus lines that were,
But who fought is that?
Well, the thing is, and that's where I think Elliot was thinking, it's not a question of fault. They made that decision. And the question is, do we spend our energies, and therefore your point becomes valid, on one side, do we spend our energies looking at the decisions they made and telling and be pointing the finger about the decisions they made and how it's not even beneficial to them by making that decision? Or do we look at, as you're saying, which I agree, well, who is those authentic leadership as we move on that carrying on? And you gave Adam Jackson, we just had on Derek Muhammad. Wouldn't they be those who will be the ones who be filling those shoes?
See, honestly, to be honest with you, I can't support, and this is just me personally, I can't support authentic leadership today, people that's already in the groups like NAN, PUSH, The Nation, and places like that. That's just not my thing. I'm past that stage because, see, when you witness things over a long period of time and you see how it goes about the business at hand in the position that we in today, as you sit back and reflect, I want to hear new voices that are separate from those groups, because in all honesty, as far as I'm concerned, those groups haven't moved our people forward. Now it's time for young voices and new voices that are not controlled by the money of our oppressors to come forward and start setting the agenda for us moving forward, because they got the biggest battle in the world dealing with those groups and those Negroes that want to assimilate into the daddy's house. You know, I call them those Democratic Party Negroes who basically can't deal with the fact that the white mommy didn't win the election. You see what I'm saying? So there's so many things, in play that, you know, it is what it is. And that's why I say we need to get those young voices out there. You know what I mean? Because they are the ones who will help put us on the right path, because we're in serious trouble. We think that we are in a position of moving forward, but I mean, I'm just...
Well, Jay, let me say something to you before I let you go. The leader you might be looking for might be in the mirror. See,
no,
we
brother,
can't.
No, wait.
Let me finish.
I'm going to leave you with this, because I got to go too. I don't want to be in the spotlight, but I have said this to you over those 30 years, and this is my track record. I have trained, not when I say trained, I have mentored around 40 or 50 kids. And I can honestly say to you, out of all of those kids, I've only lost 3, and the majority of them have college degrees or they have a trade. And the 2 main things that I have given to them that I'm most appreciative of and I will continue to do is, number 1, that you are African and your responsibility is to African people. And number 2, the white man is your perpetual enemy. And I can honestly say, out of all of those kids, and I'm in touch with all of them, they still feel that way, and they understand that the white man is their perpetual enemy, and they doing the same thing with their children and with other kids that they get involved with. And that's the only way I could ever be a leader, and that's the only way I could ever move forward is through those kids. Because I can't do it. Let me say this.
I gotta run. Okay, I'll talk about it. Just listen off the air.
All right, hold up.
I'll say this, Richard, that what Jay is talking about is good. If he has mentored 3 youth to understand that Europeans is our enemy, that's good. But the challenge now is, what do we do about it? People knowing that, okay, that's one thing. We got to do something about that. And that's where these think tanks come in, these study groups, where we can develop strategies to move our people forward. That's why I was talking to Brother Derek when he was on. Listen, right now he's trying to get everything stable in his community and help the elders and his family and people in the community. But once things kind of settle down, then they're going to get to the real nuts and bolts talk. And he mentioned on here about the people changing their dynamic down there. That's an opportunity for them to change through a catastrophe, for our people to start changing their mindset. And one of the things that, you know, Jay was talking about the attack on Sister Soulja. And, you know, everybody remembers that if they're of a certain age. Richard, what do you think was behind some of that attack?
Well, I mean, the youth, that generation, it was
probably... No, I'll agree with that. But what do you think, when you had different leadership, and he talked about Jackson and some of the others that was there, what do you think behind that was, might have been in their mind?
As far as not supporting her in relationship to Clinton, they were supporting the party. They didn't want to disrupt... What they were, those young people were saying, is what recently young people are saying that is being co-opted, and it's always that they were not loyal to the social or economic system as it is. You know, they were on the final end of the destruction of the Panther Party. They're the next generation. Right after that, the '80s, the Panther Party was totally decimated after 72 to 75. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They were the next generation. And then they came up with a new art form to communicate to a generation that the system hadn't even known about. They were creating the music and putting it going out on the street. And they didn't need the radio to play them. They didn't need to be on television. And they were taken with Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, what they was taking, what Malcolm was saying, they were already implementing the ideals of what it was to have African civilization. So if that had to once again take formation, organizational, see, that wasn't an organization, they were just the communication. Sister Soldier may have been a part of, and Jay and others like them were a part of a network, but they weren't a part of an organization and a formal organization and may have been most sophisticated. So to answer your question, for me, what Jackson and them, who were a part of a formal organization that had to maintain it, and as Jay said, you know, you need to get paid and it need to have funding in order to maintain. And if they would have got the youth to be able to persuade them not to go into that, not to support that, because that's what they wanted. The Rainbow Coalition wanted the youth to be a part of that political movement. They needed those numbers. And then here goes Clinton catering to the white mindset, said, well, here she's vocal. She's a female. I'm going to get rid of welfare, which is those women on black women who are, I think, the welfare queen was the imagery of the political campaign at that point. I'm going to get rid of her, so I beat up on this young black woman who he didn't really have no engagement, as Jay said. He ain't had it because she whipped up on Donahue on TV. So I was, you know, to me, the answer to your question is what Jackson and them was afraid of was what whites were afraid of, that they would get traction, and they didn't want them to get traction. They had the drug, you know, what you gonna say? They had these guys who was making money off of drugs in their pocket. I mean, as far as in alignment with them, with the political perspective, if they were, so that means they would have had a funding source that was outside of the traditional push funding source of corporations, street funding. They would have had the guys, the rappers who were making, they were selling more CDs out of their cars than out of the stores. That's why they had to bring them in.
Yeah, well, when you strip away all of that, mm-hmm. and you get down to the bare bones, see, yeah. You mentioned about Clinton attacking her, and Clinton didn't see a problem doing that. Number one, she was black, and she was a woman. And mm-hmm. European culture look at women as second-class citizens. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our people, through the mindset we adopted, through being here, look at black women as second-class citizens. So some of those men had in their minds that she don't need to be talking anyway.
Mm. I accept that.
Because they don't look at women as part of a cultural paradigm as us being equal partners in this struggle. Women need to sit in the corner and shut up. Be barefoot and pregnant and all kind of old stupid stuff that we adopted from Europeans, because he used to go upside his woman's head. He used to treat her like a second class citizen. So that mindset is among our people. And where did they get that mindset? They get it from their religious beliefs. It don't come from any spirituality. Because if they focus in on spirituality, they wouldn't see that. That comes from a religious perspective. And a lot of times those things work against us because we didn't put those things in the religions that a lot of us believe.
I understand.
Once that hurdle is out of the way, or once we're mature enough to discuss these things, and the discussion is going on all the time. Jay keeps saying these leaders need to step forward. The leaders are out here. These leaders that he's looking for are out here.
Right. I mean, he said, Ellie, to give him, you know, give him and those like them, their props. He said 40, and he only lost 3. So, and you know, what I'm so enthralled about that type of distributive. I mean, when we have to look at things, you know, from an organizational development perspective, that you have it where you have a house or you have a distributive network. So, as you say, and he said, the mayor of Newark was a part of their group. So, you know, it's best to have these kind of distributive. And at that same time, the discussion, because the women are going to do it for themselves. Because you hear these young women ain't taking that. They became goddesses. They ain't taking no Negro male coming out of Christian male-dominated ideological position. When they saying they the goddesses, and then again, the historians are telling them that we have ISIS, you know, and Ma'at, women, African women, symbols of truth and balance for them to show that women have a right. And we can go to traditional African societies where women are the queen mothers. You know, they ain't taking that. They're not taking that.
Who's not taking that?
Black women aren't going to take from black men who come out of some male dominated orientation.
Well, but that's why I'm saying these discussions got to be had, and honest discussions.
Yes, I agree.
Honest discussions got to be had, because if somebody says that, I might be a believer in Islam, and if somebody say that, Arabs under the banner of Islam, in the 700s, invaded Africa and started the slave trade long before Europeans even came to the continent and decimated especially northern Africa. And then I jumped to a defense. What are you jumping to the defense of? Truth is truth. I can't jump to the defense of any type of religion that people that believed it might have decimated my ancestors. That's truth. Deal with it. People that believe in the Bible, I think it's this passage in here that Yeshua said, know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I think a lot of people are afraid of the truth. They're afraid. They're afraid of the truth. We got to deal with it. Because if we start putting these beliefs on the side, nobody needs me to defend any. The heck with defending some religious belief if you open the closet door and see that belief has damaged our people. When we played that clip on Friday, that Minister Farrakhan had mentioned about Christianity. Mm-hmm. See, strip away, I don't care whether Minister Farrakhan said it. Like I said in front, Mickey Mouse could have said it. The guy around the corner could have said it. What he said, was it any truth to what was being stated? And I'm going to play it because some of our listeners might not have heard it on Friday. I'm going to play it again. What the heck? And I want somebody to call in besides the usual callers. I'd like to get, before we end the program tonight, we still got a few minutes, right, Richard?
Yes.
Before we end it, I'd like to get some callers on this because I want to play this and get some feedback on it, whether it's legitimate or whether it's foolishness. I'll play it.
Constantine went to sleep one night and had a vision. And in this vision, he saw a cross. And written over that cross were the words in Latin, in hoc signo vinces, with this sign, we conquer. All right. We who? We. That we didn't include you. You were the one to be conquered. Because when white people in Rome accepted Jesus, they started corrupting Christian theology and merging it with paganism. That's why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that Christianity was a white man's organized religion, not the teachings of Jesus Christ, but what they called Christianity was what they organized to put dark people all over the world under white supremacy in the name of Jesus Christ. Please, don't get mad. This is why today we can't unite. Because we're so filled with the doctrine of white supremacy. Starting in religion, it is fortified in education. It is fortified in the political, social development, in the folkways and mores of a civilization based in white supremacy. That's why you don't make real progress. Because you refuse to cut, separate from the organized madness of religion to the principled religion that God revealed to Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and all of the prophets. Now I'm about to move on. Daniel, before I say that, to white people, let me say, you have built a contrary world to the righteousness of God. If you are not the builder, don't worry. You're the benefactor of the builder. You can't escape just because you didn't build. You're the benefactor. Now, I want you to hear me well now. I pray that Allah will guide the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart, that it is acceptable in His sight. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I love you too much. But I have to tell the truth. The ancient church was so corrupt. It split between Orthodoxy in Asia and the Roman Catholic Church. And Martin Luther was so angered over the corruption in the Roman Church, over the sale of indulgences. Well, the church and the mosque too is like that today. You bring some money and donate well, you can indulge, and I'll look the other way. That's a hell of a church.
We don't give credit with God and His Christ or with Allah and Muhammad. If we're going to turn the mosque into a house of indulgence, and all the people that indulge have to do is give money, and the leaders look the other way. This creates dissatisfaction with those who love righteousness. And it created so much dissatisfaction, it caused the birth of Martin Luther and the Protestant breakaway, and Protestantism began. Then from Luther and Calvin and all the various breakoffs, you have all of these denominations of Christianity. But I don't care what the denomination was. Listen to me, please. It never stopped them from their brutal subjugation of the indigenous people of the world, black, brown, red, or yellow, in the name of Jesus Christ. This is real. If it were not real, Pope John Paul would not have had to come out and beg the indigenous people to forgive the church. Come on now, come on, come on.
Richard, I played that Friday, playing it again today. That's a huge part of the problem that our people need to, that hurdle that we need to get over before we start talking about real unity and moving our people forward. It's that religious hurdle. It's there.
I agree. I mean, I understand.
He mentioned in that speech, he said it's starting with religion, it's fortified in education, all that white supremacy, but it's starting with religion and how we believe. All these denominations that our people believe in come straight out of Europe, come straight out of those Nicene creeds. All the stuff we did, and I'm focusing in on Christianity because most of our people here in this diaspora are Christians. Now, if you're talking about in South America, maybe in the islands, they might be Catholic. The same thing. It's the same thing. Same suit. Subjugating our people under the cross. Subjugating their minds so they can't move forward. Because you look at the oppressor not as the enemy, but as some type of godlike figure in the back of your mind. All this stuff our people believe. Listen, it's too much information out here. All these holidays we celebrate, Easter, Christmas, all this stuff is rooted in European paganism. It's clear. It's clear. It's no argument there. It's only, well, I don't care what Richard says, I'm going to do it anyway. That's the problem. And not only I'm going to do it anyway, I'm going to teach it to my children so they can do it. Instead of teaching your children to search for the truth. Because when you do that, then they might expose you as the fraud. Or might help you to get over that hurdle that's in your mind. I mean, that's the reality, man. I ain't trying to hurt nobody's feelings, step on nobody's religious toes. It ain't about that. We all in this boat together. I ain't on shore and everybody else on the boat. We all in this boat together. But we got to realize, we got to come to the realization and the truth that the major hurdle and one of our major problems is the way that we have been believing in a spiritual being since we've been in this country. Your whole belief, I can't wait to die so I can leave here. That comes straight off the plantation, Richard. Straight off the plantation. Oh, so much misery in this life. I can't wait till I leave here and go with the Father and the pearly gates open up. That those mornings come straight off the plantation. You don't hear white folks saying no stuff like that. They don't say it.
No.
They look to make their heaven right here on earth. And not only that, they make preparations to pass down their heaven to their children. Sometimes we've been guilty of passing down the same hell to our children that we didn't suffer. But we make sure we give them that same old-time religion that we believed. And I don't care what it is. I ain't trying to stir. None of them no different than the other. All of them been tampered with by European hands. I read again that article out of his own mouth. He admits, and I'm going to read it for the listening audience that didn't hear it Friday. It says the library in Egypt. Now this, keep in mind that this was in 48 BC. It says the library in Egypt was the largest, most significant libraries in the ancient world. Famous for having been burned, thus resulting in the loss of many scrolls and books. It was the symbol of knowledge and culture that had been destroyed. There was little consensus when the books were actually destroyed. Manuscripts were probably being burned in stages over 8 centuries. Burning was supposed to have been an accident after the siege of Alexandria by the Roman government and Caesar. It says the ancient and modern sources identify 4 possible occasions for complete destruction of the library in Egypt. Julius Caesar's fire during his war in 48 BC. That's when a lot of it was burned. The attack of Aurelian in 270 to 275 AD. The decree of Coptic Christian Pope Theophilus in Alexandria in 391 AD. And the Muslim conquest of Egypt in 642 AD. And he admits that scrolls and thousands of scrolls and books were burned. It was a symbol of knowledge and culture that was destroyed. Whose knowledge and culture?
Mm-hmm.
Whose ancient scrolls and books was burned?
And
come
why?
On here. And why? And exactly. And why? We got to realize that all these religions we believe in, all of them, come out of the knowledge of those works that were burned. And I don't believe all of them was burned at all. Because they wouldn't have had the blueprint to set up any of these religions. And our people didn't focus in on religions in ancient time. They had a spirituality where they respected the earth that we lived on and the people that lived on it. All of these things go hand in hand, Richard. They go hand in hand. This man didn't come up with a civilization until Greece. What was that, like 3,000-4,000 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
What was he doing before that? Why don't people ask the critical questions? If you got black civilizations that existed for thousands of years, long before there was a Greece or Rome, what were those people doing before they were quote-unquote civilized? And where did they get the blueprint to set up any Greece? We see it clearly where they got the blueprint. They was always warlike. They came from that environment, a self-preservation environment. It was cold up there, barely any food. I guess when we come to the realization that some of these things, I mean, Malcolm even said it. Malcolm came to the realization late, and then they murdered him. that in order to move forward, we got to put our religion in the closet. Sure, that's your faith that have grounded you, and that's good, especially if it has given you moral principles that guide your life. But when you're talking about getting our people out of this hellhole that we're in, we're going to have to put some of them things aside, put them in the closet. I got to stop because I'm dealing with Easter. You ain't dealing with it, so I got to stop. I got to buy Christmas presents. We're going to have to table a lot of this stuff, Richard, if we plan to move our people forward. We got to. It's an impediment.
I hear you.
And I'm not trying to hurt nobody's feelings. I'm just dealing with the reality. We got to start thinking critically about our situation we in. It's no sacred cows. Everything is up for discussion. It's got to be. Well, our people will never be free of the situation we're in. We'll just be on an endless cycle. Right now, we can see that this system is looking for our youth to be manning all these prisons that they're building across the country, state, federal, and private. Mm. The new slavery, the new old slavery, same thing. And if we can dodge it, and if we can duck and dodge it, then our children are lucky. Come on, man. We got to do better than this. Let's grab it. 816 area code, 816.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Elliot? Brother Richard, how y'all doing?
How are you, sir?
It's a Santa Monica KC, man. Just listening to the program.
What you say? Would you say Sam?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Go ahead, Sam.
Santa Monica KC. Yeah. Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I just listened to the program, and I caught the middle of Brother Derek Muhammad talk about mentorship a little bit there. But I was just chiming in because I heard you. I caught the conversation with you and Brother Jay and kind of flipped into spirituality a little bit with the clip from Farrakhan. And my comment is that, you know, for black people or African-Americans, people of African descent, is to remember, as you just brought up about the burnings in Alexandria and where a lot of these major religions have come from,
mm-hmm.
from Africa, is to remember that we have been studied tremendously. And that is from being here on this continent, on this landmass, all the way to the continent that we call home in Africa. We have been studied, man. I remember reading, going through Chancellor Williams' book. I read that this year, The Destruction of the Black Civilization. We have been studied to a T, all the way down to our, what you would call, I guess, I hear some religious historians call, down to our religiosity. We've been studied. Brother Ellen and Brother Richard. These people have been studying us. They know that we hold certain things in high regard.
Yes.
Sometimes we put ourselves on a pedestal when we start talking about Kemet and all this other stuff. Yeah, the high points is true. We've had some low points too as well. But we have been studied, man. And everything in society, as I tell my wife, has been weaponized, whether we want to believe it or not. And I remember hearing a clip from Neely Fuller. We have to start getting our heads in the game. We can't afford to, as you were talking about, brothers getting caught off in these philosophical battles with one another, who's right, who's wrong, who's religious, all these things. Well, all of them, their hands are bloody, as you were just pointing out. Their hands are bloody. Not only are their hands bloody, the stuff ain't even original.
Exactly.
And if that's the case, then, you know, as I engage brothers and sisters, even as I engage my wife and my own household, we have to start thinking constructively. What is constructive? We know these things. We know we have these differences, you know, but what is constructive right now? Because as you look at these civilizations, man, I just brought up Chancellor Williams' book, which is a, you know, it's a great book of the time, and even to today. If you look in that book and start thinking about constructive things, we always had differences. The point is for us as a collective to do something that we didn't get a chance to do or was on the verge of with the Haitian Revolution is to come together under, we know we have all these philosophical things, but to come together and say, you know what, our freedom at this point in time, our liberation of the mind and socially and economically is the most important thing. Is the most important thing. And so, yeah, that's just been my comment, man. Just, you know, for us to, I see some brothers get tripped up. We got some brothers who we have to start pushing our emotions aside, and we have to start thinking about what is constructive, getting our head in the game, and what's constructive. Because that's how he got on top. The current empire, white supremacy, that's how he got on top. They settled. If you look at European history, like you were just talking about with Greeks and all that, you look at European history, there was a certain point in time when they said, they just clicked and said, we got to stop all this tribal strife, and we got to figure out, hey, how are we going to get on top and how are we going to maintain it? And that's here. That's where we're at. That's where we're at right now, and that's how he got on top. That's how every other empire that came up. We have to remember that because we've been scattered for so long. We have to remember that. We got to start getting our head in the game and start thinking of constructive things. One of the most basic things we can think about now, you had Derek Muhammad out of Houston with how we can help some of the brothers and sisters down there in Houston and help them from what I'm seeing images of possible some of these white supremacist groups coming in there and trying to do our people dirty like they did in Katrina. Period. You know, so that's just my comment for today, brother. I appreciate you for letting me know.
Sam, thank you for your input, brother, and don't be a stranger.
Yes, sir.
Richard?
Yes, sir.
Interesting comments by Sam.
That's it.
You know, he hit it right on the head. I hope that I don't know whether he heard it, but I got Brother Derek to repeat it when he talked about him going to the church because he was helping out there to try to organize supplies. And the truck that came in, I forgot where he said it was from. Did he say Louisiana, New Orleans or whatever?
Yeah, New Orleans.
Yeah, some white folks driving the truck said that they came down. No, he said Dallas. It came down from Dallas.
Dallas, right.
And came down because they wanted to give out supplies and, you know, they wanted to talk to the pastor. And when the young man came over that was dressed in, what do you say? New Black Panther Party. They just pulled off. They said, who is this guy? He said, well, he's coming to help offload these supplies. And they just pulled off, left the people there without the supplies. So, I mean, it just shows you what, you know, the thing that we're up against as a people. Prepare our children. You know, Sam talked about the study of our people, and I fully agree that they have studied our people and are still studying. But we haven't adopted that same mentality towards Europeans. To study their behavior, see their weaknesses and strengths, see what they're capable of doing and not capable of doing, see what they're apt to do in certain situations. These things will help our people develop strategies to move our people forward. We haven't done that because somehow that's wrong. We're supposed to love our enemies. If the man smack you in the face, you're supposed to turn your cheek so he can smack the other one. All those type of things. that it might be that those men might not have said, and in fact, it's a good chance, it's a 99% chance that those men never said those things at all. During those Nicene councils, there were certain books that was deemed as canonized, certain passages deemed as canonized by the same Europeans that passed the Bible out among people. They didn't write those things. They manipulated those things. It's a difference. You find a lot of our people, oh, Europeans wrote the Bible. No, that's not historically accurate. They should say, if they do a little more studying or independent study, they'll come to the conclusions through evidence that Europeans manipulated what we call the Bible. Clear manipulation. So then that's when the work starts. See the things that has been manipulated and helped by people, and see the things that have hurt our people. I'm going to take this last break, and then we're going to come back and wind things down. Interesting discussion tonight, but we'll be right back to wind the program down.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customer, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Again, I want to thank our guest this evening, Houston-based activist and author, Brother Derek Muhammad, was with us this evening to talk about the situation of our folks down there in Houston, the Houston area of Texas, where Hurricane Harvey, the catastrophic hurricane, devastated the communities down there. To get an update on what's going on. Brother Derek said that he would come back in about 2-3 weeks to kind of give our listening audience an overview of what's happening there. Richard? I'm sorry, Richard?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know what? I wrote it down on the... I know it's around here somewhere because I'm going to post it on the website of that address that he gave where folks could send donations if they chose to, and that he would where's it at? I'll find it because I'm gonna post it on you didn't write it down, did you, Richard?
I didn't write it down, but it was the no, I didn't.
Yeah, I'll get it because it's here, because I'm gonna post it where the folks can go on either the Facebook page or the website and get that address. You can be able to hear the program in its entirety if you missed any of it by going to timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and the podcast will be posted on there. Again, you can go to timeforawakening.com to catch any of the podcasts of tonight or any of the some of our past programs. The podcast is up on the site. Again, this month will be a special month for Time for Awakening. It's several different programs that's going to start being aired, African Perspectives, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1 will be aired. coming in September. Dr. Rogers' program will be aired in September on Saturdays, if I'm not mistaken, Saturday afternoons. And Us Lifting Us, Ulu, will have a program on Thursdays moving forward. And there'll be other programs being added very soon on Time for an Awakening. And we also have the program towards young black millennials, which is revived with the host Sister POC, which comes on Sunday evenings, Sunday mornings, 11 to 1, or middays, 11 to 1, and on Wednesday nights from 8 to 10. So catch our program early Sundays and on Wednesday evenings, and look forward to the other programming that we have coming up on Time for an Awakening. As I said before, one of the other locations that our program is being simulcast on is the Southern Soul Network. We're looking forward to some other networks picking us up. Even though we're heard worldwide, it's good to be in kind of specialty niches in certain areas where our people can hear the content of what's going on and call in and participate. Any last words before we close things out, Richard?
No, it's been informative. Brother Jay maybe had to pull back. I'm looking over, making sure. You know, sometimes when you're going off of personal memory about things, it's kind of different than maybe what the historical facts is. And the the point that you're making, driving home in relationship to how religion actually doesn't serve our best interests. And I guess that's why Malcolm says, you know, you keep your belief is your belief. And we could still work together, but that's something that you hold that gives you strength and energy. Mm. But in relationship to what we have to do, that requires something else. In relationship to just not how it affects your mind and spirit, but how it affects you, how you relate to others.
Exactly.
And that's what's important. And that's why, you know, Ali, I would say at that point, and I think that's where you say dealing with the truth come, because as much as we agree on the history, it doesn't have to, we have to accept what history says about our belief, our religion, our you know, points of view. But we have to accept that, but it doesn't have to change us. But we can still work together to change our objective reality. And that's what we're dealing with when we're talking about white supremacy, is changing our objective reality. Do we really want to always be on the bottom? Do we want to see our children's children on the bottom? That's the question.
Yeah, well, it's a must. We don't have any alternative. We have to work together. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country,